Hey, that's just doing it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Glenn Greenwich coming to you live from the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. And tonight is Man of the Month. And we're going to be featuring a terrific gentleman that I've worked with, Ade Faison. But before we go there, I'm going to tell you a little bit about, actually I'm going to start off by reading the Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. Today's date is July 26th, 2009, and we're coming from New York, New Jersey, and we've got a couple other folks. Looks like Detroit's on the line as well. So coming to you from all over, we're going to take a moment of silence. Thank you. And this is the Man of the Month. This is part of our network. We've got several shows. Each Sunday we have a different show, a different topic, a different focus. The first Sunday of the month we have On Track with Henrietta Byrd out of Chicago, Illinois. And she keeps us on track in terms of our projects and what we're up to, what we're working on, and where we are in life. The second week is Shakesha Showers, and we want to actually send out a special blessing to her family. She just lost her mom a couple days ago, so we just want to send her some white light. Her show is Let's Celebrate, and it's the second Sunday of the month, and it's about heightening the joys and the projects and the things that we're up to, and it's about bringing in young people and having fun and just being a celebration of life. On the third Sunday, we have Vision Works with Clara Lyons Devon out of Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and it's about the vision. It's about having the vision, looking at what is going to have us keep on track and be on track and make sure that we're making things happen consistent with our vision. And then, of course, the fourth Sunday is Man of the Month, which is tonight, and of course we're going to be featuring a very special friend of mine, Ade Faison, who has done some tremendous works on the planet. And I do say on the planet because he is an international traveler. He is a spiritual brother that brings all different aspects of our African heritage to light. I ran into him actually at Landmark Education first off, but we actually did some work, and we'll talk a little bit about that, Tear Technology of Soul, and that was my introduction into African spiritualism and history. So without any further ado, let me bring Mr. Ade Faison. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Glenn. Pleasure to be here with you. Can you hear me?
My brother.
Okay.
Yes, we can.
Okay.
The pleasure is mine. So Ade, tell the folks a little bit about who you are in the world and what, you know, some of the things that you've done.
I thought you'd ask me that question. And so let me start. How did I get to New York? You know, I'm a graduate of Howard University, mm-hmm. engineering school. And that came about as a prompting and expectation of my parents. I was going to be the first professional college graduate in the family. Mind you, there were teachers, at least one or two that I knew who'd graduated and were teaching school, but I was to be the professional, the one who was going to get out in the corporate world and make my folks proud. And I say my folks because it was more than just my family at that time. We're talking about the race, that everything that I did was a representation of what we could do as a people. So whether I wanted to do this or not, it was part of the story that I was due to fulfill. And there are probably a few people who have that story, you know, to fulfill my parents' expectations and uphold the race and all of that. So,
you had a predestined destiny, huh?
Yes, so to speak. You know, I guess you could say I chose those two parents because I needed to demonstrate that in my life, you know.
Gotcha.
At any rate, I worked for about a year and a half as an aerospace engineer up in Orange, New Jersey. And I went to I took that job because I had a friend there, a childhood friend, who we had grown up together, and I knew he knew how to party, and so I wanted to at least be around people who could party because engineering jobs were few, and besides being almost like a spook sitting beside the door, you know, at least I wanted to have some fun.
That's funny.
yeah, but you know, no. That was the truth of it.
So tell us, about what time frame we're talking. We're talking about the late 60s, early 70s, right?
We're talking about 67, 68.
Okay.
And
okay.
That year, 68, really shifted my whole life because I went from being, someone on the fast track to become a name in the world, to someone who found themselves not happy. I became very disillusioned very quickly working on in the Defense Department on aerospace, in the aerospace industry. I was doing things, Glenn, like working on gyroscopic platforms and accelerometers. You know, not stuff that I could talk to my parents about, or when I went home to visit them and they said the radio's broke or the TV's broke, I didn't even know what to do with that. And then, like, what good was my engineering degree? I couldn't figure the radio or the TV in the house, you know?
Right.
And I didn't like, as I was growing saner, I didn't like having to work on the war effort in terms of Vietnam.
Gotcha.
And then one day, I don't know which one came first. I think it was King's assassination. And I was so stupid. You know, I remember going to a concert the day King was assassinated to go see the Five Stair Steps at a concert in Newark, New Jersey. And I drove up, and my friends, he and I, we were profiling. We drove up in a Corvette. All right. Up, down, music blasting, and everybody's standing outside of the school. And we're like, what's going on here? And they said, you know, well, Dr. King's been assassinated. And I looked at my buddy, and he looked at me, and said, so how come we're not going to do the concert, you know? Like, stupid, you know? Out of it I was, unconscious.
Yeah, that's really, because you are exactly who you are in that moment in present in time, and now that you can look back at it, you were unconscious to the impact of it. Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I spent, I think, the next week, I hardly went to work because the power of it just kept coming into my life. And, you know, I'm from D.C., so I went home to D.C. because of all the the riots that were going on. I just wanted to be with my family, my mother and father, and sister and brother. And that's where I just got glued to the TV to watch all that was going on about King's life. And it wasn't long after that that somehow or another I found myself sitting in front of a TV watching a show. I don't know if it was Soul with Ellis Hazlip. I think it was. And Barbara Antier and the original Last Poets were on this show. And the original Last Poets are talking about Die, Nigga, Die, some poem they had written. This is when Felipe Luciano and David Nelson and Gowan came with it. And then Barbara came on talking about we can be what we were born to be and you ought to come up and do something with your people in Harlem. And I was scared to death of Harlem, but it was enough to shake me free of who I had on the path that I was on and move. I like jump track. And it wasn't a few months later I quit. I actually quit the engineering job. I could care less. But I quit in a way that was really funny. My check kept getting smaller. And I said, how come the check's getting smaller? They said, you aren't coming to work. You used up all your sick leave, your personal time. I said, oh. And it dawned on me I wasn't coming to work. I must be moving in a different direction. So I just finally said, I'm quitting. That was hard because it pretty much broke my parents' heart to see me do that. That was the beginning of my days with the National Black Theater. Middle of 69 was when I got there. And I stayed there for another, I grew up there 25 years later.
Now, at what point did you do Landmark? So you did Landmark 74. After you were.
74.
Okay.
Yeah, because Frederica Teer, Barbara's sister, it wasn't Landmark, it was the S training. Had done the S training in Hawaii in 73. She may have been one of the first in that group of the first people who ever did S. And so when she came to the National Black Theater, and she had a lot of credentials. I mean, she had been a person who'd worked with the Panthers out in L.A. to create the free breakfast program out there.
Sure.
Freddie was very much in the movement. And when she came to National Black Theater, she said, well, you guys got to do the S training. And we were like, what? Go where? Downtown with who? Some white dude and do what? It was like, you got to be out of your mind. And but she rallied us around and actually did an all-black training. But I was so entrenched that I didn't do all-black training. I still didn't know way in the world I'm going to do all-black training. And I remember the community. She did the first community workshop at the National Black Theater. And my man, Leroy McCrae, was co-hosting that event. And so at the end of the spiel about what it could be and all the possibilities, she looked at Leroy and she said, and Leroy was an activist in the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
She looked at Leroy and she said, Leroy, would you like to be the first person to sign up? And Leroy said, sign up? She said, well, yes, we need your address. And he said, I don't give nobody my address. And I was right there with Leroy, like, I'm not giving anybody my address either, you know? I didn't do it. My S training came about 4 months later when Freddie, I saw the results of the people who did do it. And Barbara and you remember Adeyemi, I remember they did it. And I think Zuri did it. And Zuri and I were, Zuri and I were seeing each other at that point. And they came back raving about it.
Bill Patterson was part of that black training, or no?
I don't know. He could have been. He could have been because he was around at that time. He could have been part of that all-black training. There were about 50 so-called black leaders who were in that group.
Okay.
But my training was 4 months later. I did what I would consider all-white training. I think it was six black people in the, about 150 people in that room. And so I had to get it directly. You know, I couldn't be with just black folks. I had to get, I think for me the lesson was the value of people, of white people, all kinds of people in that training, you know, that I had to see that whatever I thought was my special story was just a story.
Just a story, yeah, true, true. Because that's one thing about Landmark, you get to see that the story is not even unique. It's
yep.
just another story.
Yep. And all my specialness about it, you know, I mean, I still tried my best, you know. It never could get me to be on time for anything. They'd ask me, "Are you late?" I said, I don't know. Am I late?" And they would go, "Well, don't you know whether you're late?" I said, "I don't know what kind of time. You're going by this clock time all the time. You know this wrist watch time." I said, "I don't go by that. I go by modal time." I said, "What is modal time?" I said, "That when you finish one thing, it's time to do the next."
Sound like a true engineer, right?
And I was trying to be African engineer. I don't know what I was attempting to be, but I call it special. But they never could get me. I never could understand. It wasn't until I think I got to Youth at Risk and I began to see the price of what it was to show up on time, not to show up on time, you know, for a team, for a community to get something done. And I'm showing up when I want to show up, and everybody else has had to do whatever they had to do in order to get there on time. And I finally wound up appreciating people for what they had to do to show up on time. But most of the time in my National Black Theater days, if it wasn't in the flow of my living, which my work and life at National Black Theater became just kind of one blended in piece. I mean, I lived in the National Black Theater, the coal flat, you know. I did some things there that I couldn't even talk to my parents about, but I was not into money. I was not into, I guess you could say, a quality living environment. It was just, I just wanted to be part of the woodwork. I wanted to be part of the streets. You know, I was wearing paratrooper boots and...
Well, you know, I mean, you're saying that, but you know what? Who you were for me at the National Black Theater was the energy that was making it happen. Like I know Barbara Antier was doing her thing, but she was like the visionary, and you were like the person that actually got it done. Like, you were the person that took it on, that was like in the trenches, making the phone calls, interacting with the people, you know, rallying the troops. You know, one of the things that I got from you, I don't even know if it was before TEAR or Technology of Soul or after, but I was clear that who you were was a leader and an organizer. Like, I was real clear that who you were was an organizer for the movement.
That's true. I mean, I have to give my props to someone who, I haven't spoken this man's name in years, Reverend Bill Land out of North Carolina. We used to do community organizing classes at 2 a.m. in the morning, 2 a.m. to 4. That was our class time.
Wow.
I mean, we were undercover revolutionaries, you know? But he taught me and worked with me and a few other people at the National Black Theater to develop that kind of skill. I mean, I think my coming out ceremony was when the apartment house I was living in on 126th Street between Amsterdam and Morningside, the sixth floor walk up, I was on the sixth floor. But I wasn't alone on the sixth floor. There were 70 and 80-year-old people in that apartment house. And, I mean, the rent, it was a rent control building.
Uh-huh.
So some people had rent like $45 a month, you know, ridiculous.
Wow, okay. Okay.
But the place was run down. No front door. The mailbox didn't work. The front door was messed up. The guy taking care of the janitor most of the time was drunk. I mean, it was like really crazy. And then one day I walked in there,
uh-huh.
and this woman was standing in the hallway with two babies in her arms, and she was just crying, and she said she didn't have any heat. The oven didn't work. She couldn't do anything with the bottles for her kids, and that's when it hit the fan for me. And I went, I started to organize that building. I had a cadre, that's what we call them that, about that time, a cadre of the residents there who were mostly elderly, but they were ready to burn the building down because they didn't have any services, you know. And
right.
I rallied the people I had gone to school with, my friends who had gone to Harvard, my friend, you know, people who knew something, and I got them to get behind this effort. You wouldn't believe it, but it turned out that the landlord was black. That blew me away.
Really?
No kidding.
Wow.
And but he was bougie, you know what I mean? At that point,
yeah.
he
right,
was the
right.
Negro, you know, and here we are, the niggas on the planet, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
And the deal was that they got everything they wanted, and I had to leave. That was the deal he cut. You know, I'll give all these people what they want, but you got to get out of here.
But you got to leave, right?
Yes, and I wound up moving.
Because you're the organizer, and
exactly.
you make it happen.
Yeah, but that was my entry into the activist world, and I wound up moving into the newly acquired. We were renting a space on 9 East 125th Street. No. Yes, because we started out at 23 East with the original Last Poets there. And then we got the place on the corner on the third floor, and that's where I moved in. And, you know, my rationale was that I had a lot of skills in building stuff, so I got busy in building that space. And it was around that time, I think, when my brother showed up. At that point, I was a black sheep in my family because I was not doing what I was supposed to be doing. And my brother was very interested in what I was doing. He wound up quitting college and coming to Harlem, and then that just put me more in the hole with my people, my family. But together
and then,
we started to build a place, you know, and create it. And
then your sister came out not too long after, right?
Not this. Yep. She came out also. She came from D.C. That's Abasola. God bless her soul. And she found a home there. And then I was really in bad shape with my family. Because they just saw me as Pied Piper taking everybody from home, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, and that's where my brother and sister are still, you know. I think Nabi is the facilities manager.
Right.
And Abasola was Barbara's right hand until she passed. And I think she now she's got some executive position there, attempting to hold it together and take it to another level.
Cool, cool, cool. Well, this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. This is the Man of the Month, and we're featuring Mr. Abde Faison and talking about some of the great works that he's done. I just want to let you know that the International Black Summit annual event is occurring next week in London, England, starting
wow.
off Thursday night, July 30th. 31st, August 1st, and August 2nd. So that's in London, England. And that information, the registration information can be reached on the website, www.blacksummit.org, and you can certainly get all the information from there. We're talking, the Man of the Month is featuring Mr. Abde Faison, we're talking a little bit about internet, about the National Black Theater. I want to ask you, at what point did you get involved with Youth at Risk? I know Claudette was very impactful in getting that started. And tell us a little bit about the history of you and the Youth at Risk and Claudette and such.
Yeah. Claudette's the catalyst for Youth at Risk in New York. You know, she's a co-founder, and 89, I think. but she was also participating in the, what's it called, Breakthrough Foundation in 85. And she was, and Claudette and I really hooked up in 83, okay? That's when Cupid shot that arrow at both of us, you know, it was like, bam, like, what? Because Claudette had been one of my students at the National Black Theater. So how are you going to get connected to a student, you know? But it occurred one day at something called the Meeting Place, of all things, and Nabi and Tunde were doing a concert. And I'm not going to tell that story. Anyway, Claudette and I hooked up. And out of that hookup, out of that connection, we married. I don't know how to say it, but we got married. Uh-huh. And Claudette was always straight up, you know, like, we're going to have to do it right, you know. So we got married. And, you know, we had a daughter. She came with a daughter already, and that was Desiree, her niece. And Desiree is so smart. She adopted us as her parents. She said, y'all going to be my parents, you know, like that. Desiree is so powerful. And so we had two daughters, and we were bringing up my two sons. And so Claudette's work with the Breakthrough Foundation was a bicoastal piece. She was the follow-through director of the 10-day program. So after the 10-day program, which Breakthrough Foundation would do in different cities, she would be the one that would keep it going for the next 10 to 11 months and coaching people in those cities as to what kind of workshops to do and what kind of work to do with the mentors who were showing up in those cities. Gotcha. When the Breakthrough Foundation completed, I'll just say it like that, in 88 or so, Claudette picked it up and said, okay, people in New York said, would you steer, be the pilot for the youth at risk in New York? And that's when it started. She accepted that and brought it into a 501c3 existence. So it was always in my house, okay?
Hold on. Let me just back up and give some folks some background of the Breakthrough Foundation, because I'm not sure if everybody knows who's listening. The Breakthrough Foundation came out of Landmark, or the S Training, and basically the Breakthrough Foundation was set up to work with youth at risk. And they had an agreement with Landmark. Well, actually, it wasn't Landmark at that point. It was Est. And they bought the technology for a dollar. So they basically were working hand in hand. And that was an avenue for Est, people who had done the Est training, to be able to be involved with youth at risk, which, as they were saying, was all over the country. So there were spots in L.A., Denver, Chicago, Connecticut had one.
Hey, Bridgeport, right?
Bridgeport, Connecticut was actually.
Atlanta was in there also.
Atlanta, mm-hmm. Philadelphia was another big spot,
mm-hmm.
and you know, as well. So okay, so go ahead. And so Claudette really took that on and started a 501c3 here in New York with the follow up after the Breakthrough had
collapsed. Yeah. So Claudette took it on and created Youth at Risk in New York, and you know, she altered the way the Breakthrough Foundation delivered the training. At that point, Youth at Risk was a brand new term, so we were really, you would think we were working with kids who you would consider juvenile delinquents, kids who were in gangs, because that's where it started. And what Claudette did was she dismantled the 10-day and created a 4- and 5-day experience for kids. And she shifted the idea that the emphasis be on the residential intensive to the emphasis being on the follow-up program, because that was, I mean, that's 9 or 10 months, whereas the residential intensive is a weekend. And so the idea was to train people, and so she took this idea to another level, because all the cities that chose to create a youth at risk, once the Breakthrough Foundation had completed, she knew most of those people who were a stand for a youth at risk in their city. And somewhere around, I'm going to mess up this date. If she's online, maybe she'll call in and say, but she created something called YARI, the Youth at Risk International, which later became GPY. GPY stands for, okay, I'm losing it right now, but it became the national consortium of cities where that each had a youth at risk program. And what Claudette brought to that consortium was the idea of a training academy. And the training academy was dedicated to training the infrastructure in each city, so that the mentorship training became very powerful. The follow-through sessions, the monthly follow-through sessions, became very powerful. The coaching of mentors, in terms of mentor managers, coaching volunteers who were mentors, became very powerful. And that still is going on today. And that's some of the work that I do today with Claudette and with some other people in the country. It also became a place where we could train residential course leaders, to train a residential course leader takes somewhere between 5 and 10 years, and people are actually living the work. And so that's been the Leadership Training Academy, GPY, has been the catalyst for doing that. So Claudette took it on, and she, in a way, became the magnet for this whole movement to work with kids, now called Youth at Risk instead of whatever they used to be called, in which young people voluntarily sign up to alter, to change, to shift their lives. That's Youth at Risk. You still there? Glenn? Oh, what happened? What am I doing wrong here?
Oh, actually, you're not doing anything wrong. I guess Glenn's mic is out. So I appreciate you telling us about the Youth at Risk program. This is Claire Lyons Devon, one of the other hosts. I'm going to jump in here for a minute until we get sound back on Glenn's mic. So besides the Youth at Risk program, Ade, what were some of the other projects that that you've been working on within the community? Can you hear me okay? Hello? Hello? Is my mic out too?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Yeah, I jumped on another line.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what happened with my host mic. But
okay.
Anyway,
I thought I had done that, but okay, great.
No, you're fine. I actually had a problem last time I was on the air. Okay, so we talked a little bit about youth at risk. But your work, I understand Claudette is in the foreground, but you've been instrumental in supporting her and making some things happen. So tell us a little bit about what you've contributed to Youth at Risk, because you've done a lot for Youth at Risk. So I just want to hear a little bit about what you've contributed.
Okay, so. GPY stands for Global Partners for Youth, by the way. Finally came
okay.
to me. And so when I got there, Claudette saw what I was doing at National Black Theater, and she said, you know, I think we're doing the same kind of work. Would you like to come and work with me? I'm sure she said for me. And I said, I thought about it a minute, and I said, okay. So one of my first efforts there was to complete what was that time what was being called a curriculum for possibilities.
Okay.
And this was a curriculum to train teachers to do in the classroom what we had been doing at the residentials. We wanted to expand our ability to reach young people, and we saw that if we could train a lot of teachers who were working with, you know, 20 to 30 kids every semester, that we could impact a lot of people that way. So I took on completing that curriculum. And then I actually was working with Denise Bryant. You remember Denise?
Mm-hmm.
And Denise was a teacher, so a teacher needed to train other teachers. And we worked with the United Federation of Teachers for about 4 years. And I was in the background coaching and training Denise to lead the curriculum for possibilities. And at some point, what I noticed was that without extended support, the teachers couldn't keep going with the curriculum because the culture in the schools would just pull it back to what was already going on there. It was like innovation couldn't happen in the public schools unless there was a critical mass of teachers in one school that were going to stand for it. And the way the workshop was offered in the United Federation for Teachers, only one or two teachers from each school was doing that. But that led me to look at what in the world are teachers learning that they have this disillusionment, this resignation so deep, you know, that the thing is, you know, this shall pass also is like the way they looked at innovative things coming into a school. And so that led me to go to Teachers College. I did that for two reasons. One, I wanted to find out how teachers are trained, and two, to give more credibility to the youth at risk work. There's somebody with a master's degree on staff, maybe some funders would listen differently than we were just a grassroots organization trying to make a difference.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So it took me 3 years to get that degree, and, you know, I had a great time at Teachers College. I have to take my hat off to them. They're a progressive school, and I would recommend that to anybody. And at the same time, that whoever goes there have some sense of what they're going for, because they are basically subject matter oriented, haven't been relational oriented, and that's what Youth at Risk was bringing to the table. How do you create working relationships with young people in a classroom? How do you create working relationships with teachers, teacher to teacher in a classroom?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That took off, and, you know, we started to train, and I guess I was the one pushing this, that we started to train staffs of other organizations who were working with youth.
Okay. Good.
That's where that went.
Okay.
And at the same time, we had increased our outreach to young people. So we started out with one program. I don't even know the name of it. But then the next thing you know, we were in Thomas Jefferson High School, we were in East New York, we were working with gangs there, we were expanding, and we went from working maybe 30 kids for one program to doing three or four programs a year working with 30 kids. So our ability to reach out and work with more kids became what it was really about, the quantities of people, so people could see that we had a curriculum that could be customized for almost any kind of young person. And we started to specialize, and this was all, I would say, coming out of Claudette's ideas, that there were girls who were pregnant, teenage girls, because it was running rampant, and so many pregnant teenagers, that we started a program called the Women and Women's Program. Somebody who had done the landmark training came to us. I remember his name was John Duda, and he had all these boys who didn't have fathers in the home, and what could we do with them when we created a, we customized our work and created the Warrior's Way program to work with young boys who were, who are like 11 to 14 without dads in the home.
Okay.
Yep, and it just kept mushrooming, you know, in terms of the populations of kids that we began to serve, even to working with adults, with mothers, actually, who are in domestic violence situations, who are in shelters who have experienced domestic violence. And we actually gave the mentor, the committed partner mentor, to the mother and as well work with the young people that were with them.
Wow. So this just youth at risk is really a much, much wider conversation than that. Okay, good.
That's right.
Yeah.
We've expanded.
Yeah, go ahead.
My latest work, Glenn and Carolyn, has been to put together an online, on-demand curriculum, to put our curriculum into a format and a website format so that we can actually work with people on a subscription basis anywhere in the world to train them to do what we do.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a webinar based a web based training. Is that correct?
I say it's in development. We've got most of the work. It's got videos. It's got the curriculum. It's got production. It's got just about everything needed in order to train someone. Our biggest thing right now is how do we train people and the quality of what it takes to maintain, first of all, to have the quality to deliver this program, because you can look at the curriculum and see and do everything it says, but if you're not living the work, because we say young people do like you do, not like you say do.
Sure.
So if you're not living the work, you're just preaching, you know? And
right,
not,
right,
and young people can smell it a mile away when you are shamming.
Yeah.
And so our work, right, the biggest thing for me is how do I train people initially to get this work and so that they incorporate it in their lives. And then I see the website more as a support coaching mechanism than a initial training format.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna kind of branch off for a second. So the work that we do at the International Black Summit in terms of being on point and working with the distinctions, that experience piece is still the crux of your training, and then the web is the support, is the ongoing keeping them on track, pretty much.
Yeah, I would say that's a great basis that I hadn't even thought about, that people who have done the International Black Summit would probably be prime candidates to become course leaders in youth at risk programs.
Sure, especially the facilitators, the facilitator training that we
mm-hmm.
go through with that. So that would be, yeah, that's certainly good. Good. So that's something that we certainly want to keep in the ongoing conversations around and seeing how we can develop that and work together in doing just that, because, you know, one of the things that the International Black Summit is actually looking at this point in time is how do we get back to grassroots?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how do we bring, you know, because we left Landmark to be able to deliver the technology of Landmark to the community.
Okay.
And one of the things in our leaving Landmark said, well, wait a minute, you have to now develop your own technology. So we've now developed our own technology and are still interested in impacting the ground roots conversation in our community. So certainly partnering up with your youth at risk training would make sense to be able to get and attack some of the young people, some of the issues that the young people are having, because I'm in conversation with a couple of people already in Queens and in Harlem, and the issues that young people have growing up are not changing. As a matter of fact, they're not getting any easier. They're actually getting harder for them because there's so much bombardment that from the media and from all of the peer pressures and so on and so forth. So that's certainly something that we want to keep in mind.
I think what I would recommend, Glenn, is that anybody who's done the International Black Summit work, that the ground floor for becoming a course leader is to become a committed partner mentor.
Okay.
And learn everything that it takes to coach, because our mentors are really coaches.
Okay.
And we use the distinctions. Whatever the 10-day look like, 20 years ago, and this is the 20th year for Youth at Risk in New York. And there's a gala celebrate. We're calling it a celebrity casino night.
And when is that going to be? Tell us, give us the information on that.
Yeah, that's happening October 6th. And I think it's going to be at the W Hotel. Tickets start at, I think, $500. And it's a 20. So we got people coming. Who's going to be there? Claire's going to kill me. names, right?
Is there a website that you can point us to that the information is available? Is on the Youth at Risk website or something?
Yeah, the Youth at Risk website. That's a good place to start. NYYouthatriskspelledout.org.
Okay.
So New York, but it's abbreviated NY, and then youthatrisk.org.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Youthatrisk.org. Okay.
And the phone number is, 212-791-4927.
Okay.
That's the main number, and anybody who's inquiring about the Celebrity Casino Night, they'll get all of the information needed.
Excellent. And that's an ongoing thing that you're doing with coming up in October 6th. Okay.
Yeah, this marks the 20th anniversary of Youth at Risk.
Excellent.
So rather than just doing a sit-down dinner kind of thing, we are into having fun and networking like that. So we just, created it so it's going to be a great evening.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
This is the International Black Summit Man of the Month talk show, part of the International Black Summit Network. This is Glenn Greenidge, and we're featuring tonight Mr. Abdel Faison. We talked a little bit about National Black Theater. We talked a little bit about Youth at Risk. One of the things that we haven't talked about yet is the Circle of Light. So that's something relatively new that I've heard you talk about, and, of course, I attended, for those of you, some of you on the line here have attended. They just recently had a birthday party, and at that birthday celebration, there was some rituals in around the Circle of Light. So would you tell us a little bit about that and your involvement in that and how that's, tell us a little bit about that, please.
Oh, man. This started in 2003. Claudette did a piece called, Claudette's always been my Pied Piper. She's just a great context for me having a wonderful life. And she did something called the Leadership, Feminine Face of Leadership. Feminine Face of Leadership. It was a workshop conducted by a woman named Betty Sproul and Dr. Caroline Fuqua, commonly known, lovingly known as Eazy-Z. And without going into the whole thing of how Claudette got into it, when she came back from it, she said to me, "I'm going to Egypt." And I looked at her and I said, I just like swallowed. I said, "Me too." And it's always been on my mind to go to Egypt. I mean, in the beginning of National Black Theater, we had the workshop called The Pyramid Process of Performing. That evolved into the Tier Technology of Soul. But it was like, how come we never went to Egypt? We went to Nigeria, we went to Ghana, but we didn't go to Egypt. So here was this opportunity in 2003.
Don't forget Brazil.
That's right. That's right. We went to Brazil before I went to Egypt. That's right. 19 strong. 19 men strong. Oh, Lord.
go ahead.
Oh, boy. We don't have to want to talk about Brazil, except it was a great experience, right? Mm-hmm. So, at any rate, 2003, she says, I'm going to Egypt. I said, me too. And the person who was conducting the trip was Aziz. And okay. So I didn't know her, but it didn't take long to meet her. And Aziz has been to Egypt, in the last 15 years, four times a year. Okay, so she is an Egyptologist who knows a lot about Egypt. And it was an incredible opportunity for me to experience Egypt with Aziz. I've been back there, I guess, maybe four or five times since that 2003 trip.
Oh,
and
really?
I've been back there to the Middle East even more than that and other things because I really got connected to the Circles of Light family. And these people all over the country and, in fact, all over the world who are, I would say, dedicated to bringing light to wherever they are. And the light being the heart, being the sense of self, being, we used to say, whole, complete, and full of joy. People who are committed to staying in that space wherever they are.
Gotcha.
And it's been an incredible experience for me. I mean, last year I traveled around the world. I was in China, I was in Ghana, I was in Nigeria. I was in Costa Rica, I was in Egypt. You know, with this group, I have been to Kenya. I have been in a lot of places that I never even thought this little boy from Augusta, Georgia, you know, James Brown's hometown, would ever even think about going, you know, that I really had an opportunity to shift my story about who I am.
Yes.
And the opportunity to support other people to shift their story about who they are. So that, in a nutshell, is Circles of Light. There are times when we have circles in New York with Aziz, and if anybody's interested in it, if you hear the call to that, you know, I'm very open to talking with anybody about that.
Okay, and how can they get a hold of you to talk about Circle of Light?
If you call the I can just give you my cell phone number. That's the easiest thing if you're interested in that. And that's 646-528-7475.
646-528-7475?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Now, I got to tell you, gang, for your listeners out there, the Circle of Light, they had – now, is it okay that I can talk about the process of lifting you up and all that?
Oh, that comes out of Youth at Risk, man. That's not Circles of Light.
That's not Circles of Light? Interesting.
No, that's – Claudette's been doing that for forever at Youth at Risk. Got that from what's the thing? It's going to come to me in a minute. But Betty Sproul's group, what was the offshoot of Est that began to have the music and everything in it? Oh, man, I'm forgetting it right now. But it's called Personal Dynamics these days. Lifespring.
Oh, Lifespring. Lifespring,
yes.
Yes.
Lifespring. Betty Sproul was the chief trainer in Lifespring. Claudette did Lifespring, amongst other million things. And out of Lifespring, that's where she's, I think, first. I also remember National Black Theater doing the lift. So I don't know where it came from, but that's not necessarily a Circles of Light thing. No.
Well, one of the things, I've got about 5 minutes left. So I just wondered, one of the things at Abe's birthday party is that people lifted him up into the air, and he's horizontal, and and in the process of chanting and sending you love.
Yeah.
And that's really what it was for me, is you were being sent love and being held up in the air.
Yeah.
And the process of up and down, being lifted and then released a little bit and lifted, but still being horizontal.
And rocked in the cradle, rocked in that cradle, you know, and then swoop, lifted right up. Oh, man, nothing like that.
Yeah, and so for me, who you've been, you've always, for me, when I look for rituals that are of African descent, you are one of the first names that comes to mind in terms of being a source of those kinds of energies and those kinds of things that are uplifting, that are processes that are clearly from our African roots that uplift us and bring us energy. So I just want to thank you for all of what you contributed to, the many communities that you've contributed to, and certainly my community and certainly here in New York, and for all the involvements, because you're a part of PDEG, People of African Descent Empowerment Group, you're a part of Landmark, you're a part of New York Youth at Risk, you're part of National Black Theater, Circle of Light, and I'm sure that there are many other aspects of who you are that I don't even know about. So I just want to thank you for who the stand that you are for life and the energy that you are able to generate and give away to so many people.
Glenn, thank you. I just say it takes one to know one.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I don't know if there's anybody else that has any questions. We've got, let me see, one hand just went up. 312-593, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, I just wanted to say thank you also. I've always missed meeting you by 2 or 3 days. Every time I come to New York, my friends always say, we just went out with Claudette and her husband. And I have never met you or Claudette. I'm friends with the Ballers. I'm friends with Willie and Frenchie.
Okay.
And I have never met you. I missed a fundraiser you all were having one time. I came in like a couple of days after, so I've been hearing about you for, I guess, 10 years now, actually. Yeah, because it was 1999, the first time, you know.
Wow.
And so I'm just listening to all of what you've done, and I wonder why, you know, there are no youth at this. There shouldn't be any left.
I wish. You know, that's beautiful.
You know, but thank you. You know, just what Glenn was saying, thank you so much. And I'm in Chicago, so.
What's your name?
Henrietta. I'm Henrietta Bird.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she's got the show. She's got the show on the first Sunday of the month.
Okay.
We've got another, now I've got about a minute left. I got another call at 770.
Okay.
369, go ahead, you're on the air. Hello? 770-369, you're on the air. You've got about a minute left.
This is coming out of Georgia.
Oh, okay. Coming out of Georgia.
I admire your speaker. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, who is this? This is Larry?
Yes,
this is Larry? Hey,
yes,
man, how you doing?
Yeah, I want to say, you know, your program is really, you know, helpful, insightful, you know, and, you know, it's all about knowledge and, you know, showing love. You know, it's a good thing. I tell you what, you know, the way all I can say is, you know, I applaud him, let your speaker, and congratulations for everything you're doing. So, see, you come from New York, I know how it is, you know, as far as where he came from, you know, the building, you know, to, you know, as far as renovating the building. And renovating the mind, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And these days, it's all about big-time renovating.
That's great.
Know, poverty is seriously out there, and we got to stomp it dead. You know what I mean? And really, I don't know how to come behind this man now. All I can say is that God bless him and, you know, and keep it going.
Thank
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Larry. We've got about 18 seconds left. I just want to let you know this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. This is Man of the Month. We are featuring Dave Faison. This show is available. It's on tape. You can go to the archives and let you know that it's available via MP3 or podcast. That's the end of the show. Thank you so much. We love you. Take care. Ade, thanks again. We love you, and we honor who you are and who you've been for the planet.
Love you, Vic.
Thank you. Okay. Good night, all.
Good night.